Spent 14 years in prison as a political prisoner. He's a former. What was the title of critical resistance? Northeast Regional Coordinator with Critical Resistance, which is an incredible organization. Now he's a member of that organization. Also a member of Estación Libre, who does delegations down with the Zapatistas, with people of color in the United States. He's a board member of Institute for Anarchist Studies. Like I said, he's all over the place. So here's Ashanti.
Thank you. I might stand, I might sit, I don't know, it depends on the butterflies inside. First thing I do want to say is that I am very happy to be here. I think the folks who put this this conference together did a really, really wonderful job. I'm glad that I was here for all of it, because there was everything I feel you need to know. A lot which you already knew, but they provided so much for you to be able to take those next steps in order to deal not only with this border and all of these other issues, Minutemen and all this other stuff, but what's dear to my heart is, like, how do we bring this empire down? Right? Always, always. And we can't move anywhere unless we're really clear that if that doesn't happen, we always will have issues like this, or some new oppression, some new misery visited upon people, and we don't want that. You know, we want something new, you know? And that's why, like, for me, I feel like I've been doing this since I was 14 years old, you know? And I've had my ups and downs, but for me, the reason I'm still doing this is because you got folks like the Zapatistas who were suppressed and beaten down for so long, and then all of a sudden they rise up, you know, where a lot of us was just like, is this revolution going to happen? Is somebody going to seize the time? Is somebody going to create their own freedom? And a lot of times when you don't see it, all of a sudden out of nowhere, here comes an uprising. Here comes a people who that capitalist global forces had just written out, that just had determined that they was no more good for anything, and now here they are inspiring people all over the world. So, like, even for me in Brooklyn, going through one of my little down periods of depression, you know, like, are we gonna make this revolution happen? Here in 1994, January 1st, there's the Zapatista uprising. Ashanti is back, you know? So, but it's not only things like that, it's also things like Seattle, you know? One of them periods I was kind of down, and all of a sudden the young folks in Seattle do it. You know, they seize the time, and Ashanti is back, you know. So all the time there's things going on that really keeps you hopeful, and it is based off of concrete actions of people who resist, who find ways of resisting, when sometimes it seems like the system just got everything clamped down. But it's not true. So, like I said, I mean, I really have been doing this since I was 14 years old. And that's like 1967, I think. 67. All right. I'm 51. Rebellion in my hometown, Plainfield, New Jersey. Small town, very racially divided. Different from, this was a period where there's a whole bunch of rebellions. But different from the rebellion in my hometown was that there was a gun manufacturing place right outside the city. The folks got a hold of the gun manufacturing place and brought back crates of M1s to the black community. Ran the police out. Was able to keep the state troopers out. And the only reason that they was able to take the black community over again was because the National Guard came with the tanks and the troops. But for a 13, 14-year-old to see my people, 400 years of oppression, beat down but continually trying, and when all else seemed to have failed, to fight back, to pull it together, to unite, it put a pride in me that lasts till this day. That's why I know I am an incurable revolutionary. What gave shape to my revolutionary beginning was the Black Panther Party. so much that I learned from the Panthers has so many similarities to the Zapatistas, because we were able to inspire people all around the world, and we were just regular folks. And a lot of us was what they called, those who know the Marxist language, we were the lumpen proletariat. We were the hustlers, the street kids, the unemployed, the welfare mothers, people also who technological America had just written off. They didn't need us in the fields anymore. They didn't need us in the factories anymore because they had computers. So what were they to do with us? They were to figure out ways to get rid of us. Some of those was ways to get us to get rid of ourselves. But somehow we also said, ya basta, enough, enough. And a series of rebellions happened and it changed the course of our history. The Black Panther Party gave it a form that said, we will fight back by any means necessary. Now what is a 16-year-old now like me joining the Black Panther Party, 16, 17 years old? Because I had seen young people all over the world, because you got television now, and you're able to see young people all over the world fighting back. In South Africa, in Mexico, 1968, Mexico City, right? You see the Palestinians. You see people fighting back all over the world, and they're young people, they're students, sometimes high school students, sometimes kids that ain't even made junior high. So for us and a lot of people in my generation, there was this revolution going on in the United States. We were a part of an international revolution, and we could play a part. And the Panther Party said that not only can you play a part, but you can play a leading part. And someone like me, I mean, I was an average student in school, but I didn't really think that much of school because school was never relevant. But now the Panthers said, no, you gotta read. No, you gotta study. No, you have to interact with your own folks in the community. Because even people like me had begun to believe so much in our own negative image that the system had gave us. Niggas ain't shit. Niggas will never do anything. Niggas will never pull it together. Now all that had changed, and we began to see possibilities. And not only see possibilities, but believe in them possibilities. So it was easy for me in 1994, January 1st, to like really latch on to the Zapatistas, because they were talking about possibilities. They were saying enough, but not only enough, but to believe that they could seize their own lives and begin to take them back. And they didn't have to be college educated. They didn't have to have all kind of degrees. They just had to know that they had enough and that their dignity was what was key. What made for a dignified life? Obviously not NAFTA. Obviously not those other oppressive forces within Mexican society. That was enough for them. So there was this great desire to find out more about the Zapatistas. The more I found out, was like, God, it was so much like the Panthers. Our lives were transformed. And here are these folks, basically Mayan folks, who had been written out, who had begun to believe in themselves enough to just deal with their local situation, not trying to be world leaders, but just their own. And were coming out with these magnificent sayings. We want to create a world where all worlds fit. You know, we're not going to try to capture state power. And me coming out of a Marxist-Leninist organization, that was profound. Because that's all I had learned to believe, that the revolutionaries must capture state power and then we must implement this new society. Now here the Zapatistas saying, no, we got to pull people together. We got to create a space where everyone can come into the picture who's concerned about transforming this world. That for me was like, damn, if the Panthers could have done this in the 60s, early 70s, maybe the Panthers would still be around today. Maybe the United States, the empire, might be a whole different place. Maybe the anti-war movement would have been successful then. Maybe the women's liberation movement would have been successful then. All kind of other movements. It gave me a sense or a way to look back on my past and to see what we could have done to be more successful. But you can't go back. But yet you can think about it. But then when you can go visit other movements, it becomes even more profound. It has more profound impact on your life. So 1997 was when I first went to Chiapas. And it wasn't with Estación Libre, it was with some anarchists. And at the time, I really wasn't even out of the closet as an anarchist. You know, I was just reading a lot of stuff and I liked it, you know. But a couple of my anarchist friends said, man, you're talking about the Zapatistas all the time. How about if we raise the money for you, will you go? And I said, yeah, but I was nervous as hell, you know. And plus, never been out of the country before. Going there the first time, we went to La Realidad. And I'm looking at this territory, this community that was running its own affairs. Obviously not rich, right? They may have been poor in economic standards, but one of the things that was different from then that struck you immediately was that they were happy because they were running their own affairs. Different from in San Cristobal, where the poor folks there, you can see the oppression in their face. You can see that there's not these vibrant smiles in their face. But in these Zapatista communities, they might be poor, but it's theirs. It is their independence, their self-determination, it is their autonomy, whatever word we use. That, for me, again, took me straight back to my own community, whether it was Plainfield, New Jersey, Harlem, wherever. What would it have been like for us to hold on to our own black community long enough for people's pride to solidify to the point where they said, not only no more, but now we will figure out ways of sustaining this. Lessons upon lessons from the Zapatistas began to hit me to the point where I know that I was not only back, but I needed to look for other folks who were equally inspired by the Zapatistas. 1998, I found out about Estación Libre. And different, it was different from other support groups because it was a people of color organization that wanted to bring people of color because it felt like most of the folks going over there to do support was white folks, whether they was from here or Europe or whatever. And how much people of color and oppressed communities here could benefit from what the Zapatistas was doing. So 99 was when we went. Again, as we went to La Realidad, we went to Oventique, we visited Acteal, but everywhere we went, we saw a people in resistance which took the form of autonomy or self-determination. They say autonomy, I'm still used to the word self-determination. But immediately it hits you that if these people can maintain this struggle with virtually nothing, what are we complaining about? What are we complaining about? We have all the technology and we have access, and I also discovered that I had privilege in Mexico, which was also a hard little lesson for me, right? Because here in the United States, you know, black, African descent, on the bottom. But for me to even go to Chiapas, I got some kind of privilege that they don't have over there, right? And when I'm sitting in them restaurants, in San Cristobal, you got the Mayan folks coming up to you with the hand out. They want anything you got, peso, anything. They'll shine your shoes. They'll shine your sneakers. It would enrage me, not at them, but at the situation that capitalism, local and global, have placed them in. So for me, it was like, we got to step up this struggle. We got to step it up. They're holding their end down. We got to hold ours down. Our solidarity in Estación Libre took the form of our struggles here in the United States got to be stepped up as one of the best ways to support the Zapatistas. We was not there to just do some goody-goody support, build a school. Good stuff, help build latrines. Good stuff, and some of us did that too. But we knew that the best way to help not only ourselves and be free, right, but to help the Zapatistas, to help the folks struggling in Africa, Asia, Latin America, and in Europe, wherever, bring the empire down. If that means us beginning to take control of our own communities, pulling ourselves out of the equation, which is basically also what we think the Zapatistas do. They say, we're not playing the game no more. We're pulling out. We're not even going to try to change the world. We're going to create our own. Right? Folks that want to deal with that, hey, but for us, we're going to build a life based on dignity. And their dignity was very much connected to the land and how they survived on the land. If that got in the way of NAFTA, hey, that's just the way it go. If that got in the way of other plans that was leading towards someone else's profit, that's just the way it go. It gets disrupted. But from the beginning, the Zapatistas say, this is the road that we're on. This is a road that's been going on for 500 years, and this is the road that we choose to stay on, and we ask for folk support. You know, and it was just magnificent to see such a humble group, and such a group that just decided that they were not going to follow this vanguardist path. They were going to create a space and say, hey, y'all, come on. Let's go. Let's do this. What if we could do that here? The work that we're doing, even around the migrants and stuff like that, is not just for the migrants. It's about creating something different here, right? Because this thing could be resolved, and then there'd be something else. We want to get that system that creates these problems, right? It's never just for them. You know, it's never just for some specific oppression or injustice. We're on a vision. We're on a dream. And these Zapatistas have told us that it's great. Dream, envision. That's what it's about. You don't even have to have the correct analysis. You don't have to have the path laid down already. Walking, we ask. These wonderful expressions that they would have. I mean, they were better than cracking open the fortune cookie, you know, to get these little things. But they were very simple. That you don't have to have the answers. And how can you? When you are such a diverse people, people have so many different experiences. Therefore, revolution for them becomes not the big R, but the small R, right? The big R has all the answers. The small R says, come on, we'll figure it out as we go. Great stuff. Same stuff that we need here in the United States. So those of us in the Stars and Libre, we're like, if we could just get this message here, spread out a little bit more. If we could just get to folks who are willing to ask, how can we do this and figure it out as we go. I was very amazed that even here that folks are willing to ask those most impacted by this border issue, how do we proceed? And it may seem like nothing because you're engaged in it, but it is monumental. That you have not went to folks most impacted and say, hey, I know how to do this. I know how to get you out of this. That you are concerned with their lives and that you're asking, can we all sit down and work this out and then take them steps? The taking the step part, and I need somebody to keep me on the time too, right? The taking the step part is important. It is not so much just a physical taking a step. It is more psychological, like if there is this line and you know that you have to act to make change, it's really the psychological part of stepping forward because you know your life is going to change. Stepping forward means that all that you have been raised on comes with you that has been taught to you to not make change. You're going to be nervous. You're going to be scared. You're going to tremble. You're going to think of all kind of rationalizations why can't do this. I can't confront the Minutemen or whatever. I can't confront the police. I can't confront the landlord. Some of us, we can't even confront our teachers or whoever, some authority figure. But what's great about the struggle is that as you can do even what you're afraid to do if you have support, you know, and in the process of doing it, your life really changes. I didn't get a chance to ask Emily about what the experience was like for her interacting with the women in the university program that she was in. You know, what it means to interact with people where not only do you help others to change, but your own life changes in the process. France Fanon says that violence can act like a cleansing force to rid you of your fears, your complex of inferiority. But think not of violence in that way, but think of it as, you know, those steps that you make that really brings you face to face with your oppressor. Almost like you're coming face to face with the Wizard of Oz. and you realize that he ain't got no power. It was all the time with what I believe that the Wizard of Oz had, you know? And in the process, you become new. You become different. You become this person who can transform the world because you realize that you were locking yourself down all the time. I think that was my greatest experience in the Panther Party, was in working in the communities. You realize that a lot of the fears that you had, a lot of the negative thinking that you have bought into as far as being black and what your neighbor was thinking, all the stuff, it dropped. It dropped. And you began to realize that you had the power all along to make these changes happen. That people do have the power. When the Panthers said power to the people, it is really the people. It is really the people. That we have the power to change whatever it is that we're confronted with. This issue of the border is just one that we're able to change, but we know there's a whole bunch of others. But it's a point that we can begin to take our lives to that next step, right? In order to help not only those who are most impacted, you know, migrants, whether they're coming from Mexico, whether they came further than Mexico to that border, but it's also a help to us. It also empowers us. We also learn who we are in ways that we didn't know. We also learn who are the folks on our sides are and what we are able to do together and how we can support each other. In that way, we are the most revolutionary force in the world, that force that can change anything that no one else can stop or crush. The spirit of the people is greater than man's technology. That was a Huey P. Newton saying. The spirit of the people, the spirit of the people. You know, we had that all the time in the Panther Party. And it doesn't matter that the Panther Party was crushed, because it doesn't matter that the Spanish Civil War was crushed. It doesn't matter that a bunch of other examples of resistance were crushed. They were there long enough to show what the spirit could do. You know? So here we are now confronted. Every day we're confronted with stuff that is really monumental, but it may not seem to us then. And there could be small steps that you take, but those small steps can have much larger impacts than you could ever imagine. So the last thing is, like, I go into the prisons. I started going back into the prisons a lot because I have comrades in prison who are on year 30, 31, 32. A couple's on year 36. 36 years in prison, still maintaining revolutionary thinking, ideals, passion. And the only thing they want to know is what's going on the streets. Is there still a struggle? Is there still a revolution on the streets? And I don't have to lie to them when I say, yeah, there's people who are still carrying it on. All right? It's just like when I come from this, and I know that in about 2 weeks I'll be visiting another one, I can say, I came from this conference here, and you had to see them. You had to see. These were the people that we thought wasn't going to do anything, you know, but they're carrying this on. They're carrying it on. And that's what they want to know, because a lot of them have accepted that they're going to die in prison. It hurts me when they say that. But in their mind, they're all right with it as long as they know somebody's carrying this struggle on. So they want to be included. They want to feel included. And I always encourage people to write your political prisoners. And there's political prisoners from the East Coast to the West Coast to the North to the South. There's Chicanos, there's Native Americans, there's African Americans, there's white folks from the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee and the Weather Underground. They're there. And they always need that connection. We went to, we went to Morelia, one of the Caracoles, and I asked for a letter from the junta in support of political prisoners in the United States. And I wasn't sure if they knew that we have political prisoners here, because, you know, the world is convinced that we don't have any political prisoners here. So I thought that I had to do a little bit of explanation about Bonilla, about Leonard, about all these other folks. And I didn't get 5 minutes until I just broke down crying. You know. And for me, this period in Mexico, this is this 6 months period that I was there, I went through a lot of changes, good changes. One of them was I finally allowed myself to cry, you know, because I'd been through so much in this little short life and had witnessed so much that I just held strong. Shanti, you got to be strong. Comrades got killed. They go to prison. Families get broke up. Folks go into exile. And I just, be strong. But at some point, you know, you got to realize that you're human. All right? And this was seemed like, for some reason, was the point where I let all this stuff go, didn't know I was going to do it. But the Zapatistas was so understanding. And my Spanish is not too good, right? But it was so funny that the woman who was speaking, I could just tell from everything she was saying and her body language that she understood what I was going through. And then when the translator broke it down, she actually did. She was telling me, listen, they also have political prisoners. They know what I'm going through. They know what I'm feeling. They know what it's like to have folks locked up for years. They were surprised when I said 20, 30 years, but they understood the nature of the oppressor who would just lock anybody up for whatever. But the request for the letter, I didn't think that I was going to get it even that day, because in some of the juntas take a while. They discuss everything. It's real. They really do. They don't have that concept of time that we do. So I'm thinking, okay, in a couple of days, and I know we're going to be gone, but maybe one of our other friends who goes there a lot can get the letter. Before that night was over, they not only did the letter, they handed it to me to let me know how much that they understood what I was going through and how much they supported this effort that we have to free all our political prisoners. For me, again, I just broke down because it's such a good feeling to know that people all over the world are struggling, and people all over the world want each other to know that we got your back. As much as we can, we got your back. Even if it's in the form right now of a letter, right? Means a lot. It is not a small thing. We have to let each other know of our different struggles that we got each other's back. Even when it's difficult, we got each other's back. Okay. With that, I don't know if there's questions, but I just want you to know, I kind of feel that I'm an apprentice elder, okay? Because I'm 51 now, right? But I watch you. I've watched this conference. I watch young people. I watch all of us, and even folks who are my peers. The fact that we're still in here doing this means that we can win. We can transform the world. Believe it. You got ancestors who walk with you every step you take. Believe it. We can do this. Panthers say power to the people. You say back all power to the people. I just want that at the end. Power to the people.
All power
to the people. It is the same thing that the Zapatistas are saying. The struggle is here. The empire got to come down because our dreams got to go up. Right on? Power to the people. A little bit, you know? For me, I recognize that spirituality, if it wasn't for that, my people would be bad shape, right? And you got to come to terms with that. I don't care how you deal with your spirit, you know, whether you deal with it in a secular way or whether you got other specific rituals that you do that are based out of your religion or whatever. But if we don't have ways of dealing with that kind of unknown, whatever name we want to put on it, we do ourselves a lot of harm. Anarchists, you know, some are very anti-God. No God, no state, no na-da-da-da-da-da, right? Yet a lot of the examples that we hold up as anarchists, you know, was like, you know, groups that are very much based in their spirituality. And it's not saying that you have to be that, but you recognize that you are this speck in this big all that is. And you need to figure out some ways to deal with it, because it's a tough struggle. It's very tough. A lot of wear and tear. And for me, like, even though I still consider my family's church my church. I don't think I believe in no formal God and stuff, but I know that when I'm having rough times, I put on gospel music in a minute, you know? And that brings me right up. Because the gospel music also takes me back to what must have worked for my people at them rough times. People are a very diverse people. We're not monolithic. In the black community, you got Christian, Muslim, Buddhist, Yoruba, and all other kind of things. I want a world for my folks where all of those spiritualities are respected, beyond just the being politically correct, but respected. Because that's even with the Zapatistas. The thing I love about the Zapatistas, different from other guerrilla groups, guerrilla movements, they're not trying to take people's spirituality away from them and put a Mao Zedong red book in their hand. They're like, no, that's part of these people's strength. That's part of these people's... I got to go to Birmingham. My son is getting married, right? And then I got to go to Ottawa. I've been on this little speaking thing, and this is definitely a new experience in my life, getting to speak a little bit, you know. But I wish I could be, but the thing is like, everything I learned from here, from the workshops to the information on events, tells me all the time that there is struggles, there's resistance going on in the country. And a lot of times I'm telling activists that you need to stop acting like what you do is isolated. Every city I go to, I learn of different struggles, of different organizing that people are doing, different forms of resistance. I think that this system's media has been very successful in even convincing a lot of us that we're so isolated that we begin to really feel isolated and not realize that we are struggling all over the United States, all over the world. Folks are fighting back. Now, we got to do a lot more work in terms of pulling it together, but folks ain't gave up. And even when the United States, folks in the United States seem to be so-called brainwashed, not really. Depends on really how you look at it. There are folks who are trying to live, and just trying to live in this society is a form of resistance, you know. And I learned even from women in the Panther Party that raising the kids, right, is one of the most revolutionary things that you do, because there's so much that it takes to raise a kid in this kind of society, so much that you're up against. It is a revolutionary thing. I do. When I went to Chiapas last year, the end of June, it took me from 14 to 50 to admit that I was burnt out. Right? I'm like walking around. I'm like, my energy is not there. I'm trying to do my critical resistance job, but it's like really hard for me to like really put myself in it. You know, I'm walking the streets, and you know, like sometimes your streets is pretty bad. You know, folks is, you can see the depression in other folks. And I had to admit, I'm burnt out and I'm depressed. It was the hardest thing for me to admit, but like once I did it, it was a relief. Then the next step was what I'm gonna do about it. And that's when me and one of my best friends, who was also part of Estación Libre, he was kind of feeling the same. He said, let's go to Chiapas, you know? I left my job, I left Critical Resistance, which employed me as well, as the Northeast Regional Coordinator. And I'm like, I'm leaving the job, everything. I gotta do this to save my life, you know? And it was the best decision I had made, you know? It gave me a chance to get it together, you know? And I encourage it, and I was just telling someone the other day that you got to factor that into your life. Times where you enjoy your life, times where you can get away from the madness. Because otherwise, you burn out. You know, you got to do it. You got to be able to enjoy life as a part of a way to keep your sanity. You got to be able to laugh at this craziness too. Sometimes even your own craziness as a way to like, just maintain your sanity. But you need community. You need to have relations with others so that you can get a little bit of help. Don't try to do it on your own. We got to win, right? We got to win. And I think what I've learned through all these years is like how to really prepare some of the things we got to do for long-term struggle. You know, we got to do it, because this may not be like the Berlin Wall coming down and all that stuff. This may be generations. At least you prepare for it. If it should fall down tomorrow, fine. If not, we're prepared to go another generation and another generation. You and then I'm with you.
Well, the whole thing of burning out, I mean, if we decide not to leave, I'm 53, mm-hmm. and if we decide not to leave and we consider it a privilege to let everything go and throw down the hoe and go to grad school, I mean, then we burn up. Mm-hmm. And that's the difference, is that what's needed right now is decades and decades of decades of people working on stuff instead of it being a rite of passage. Mm-hmm.
And I think just briefly too, I think the 60s too, because we felt revolution was like right around the corner, we didn't do a lot to take care of ourselves like we could have. Today, y'all know a lot more and y'all do a lot better than we did, you know. And you got to work it. You got to work it because it is long term. But we can do this, you know. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Best strategy that I have is really respecting you, right? My peers, right? I love them, but they cannot figure out why young people don't want to be around them. If you're older and you've been through all this stuff and you are constantly telling young people, oh, you don't know nothing, y'all ain't been through what we've been through, why would that youth want to be around you? Well, you just going to bring them down, right? And they don't realize also that youth in general, youth in the movement, I think are much sharper than we were. I think you understand a lot more of the interconnection with all these different oppressions, you know, and how to deal with some of the internalized oppressions that we didn't have. But for me, it's like I work with a lot of young people, and they tend to like me because I do not treat them like they're down there, you know. And sometimes they will keep putting me up, and I'm like, get away from me, stop treating me like that. And they'll do it, they'll still do it too, and some of it I just, okay. But they know, the thing is, I listen to them, and I tell them that they're sharper than me. And when we're dialoguing and we're sharing different viewpoints, when I'm wrong, I tell them. And for them, that is so unusual. I want them to see that this revolution got to be carried on by them. Not me, not the elders. Elders, we have a part. I'm going to be there next year, right? But we have a part, but I don't think it should be leadership. I think that what we do is we advise and we help out in other ways because we've done been through some stuff, right? But we should not be leaders. And I think one of the problems is today is like a lot of us want to live out some leadership dreams that we had back in the day. And a lot of us who wasn't even leaders back in the day, but now we want to be leaders, right? But my leadership model comes more from an Ella Baker than from others who are the brainiacs, and like, you got to follow me, you know, because I can think better than you and I can lay out this, you know. No, Ella's thing was, we all got brains, this got to be a community kind of leadership and not the other smart folks. Another thing, like the Zapatistas, is like they bring people in, you know. They rely on models that already exist. They didn't have to really create too much at all because a lot of the Mayan communities already had certain forms of collective leadership and decision making, you know. And I want something where people are involved, as participatory as we can get. Because with that, we're more creative. You know, we got more power, we got more resources. So creativity, imagination, that's what's going to take us, you know. Not those who already got worked out shit, you know. We got to win. We got to win. I want this to happen in my lifetime so that I can have my villa somewhere, you know, on the beach, you know. Yeah. Y'all got to push this. But, you got to see how Tennessee go. But I thank you for your questions and comments. But I thank you most of all for being who you are in terms of keeping this going. Keep it going. Do not stop. I got wonderful news to bring to those folks inside. All right? Thank you.